life, universe, and everything. So settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Nick and Sylvie Avery.
Welcome to Spirit's Work Show, the metaphysical and spiritual show with a difference. I'm Sylvie Avery.
I'm Mick Avery. Hi.
We are mediums, healers, and authors who have chosen to serve humanity through our gifts of spirit communication. And on this show, we focus on education. Through Mick's deep trance mediumship, we are able to bring you the truth as to the nature of your existence, direct from the other side of life. And on today's show, we'll be discussing animal sensitivity and planetary awareness. So if you'd like to join us with a question or a comment to Gregory, we'd love to hear from you. The number is toll-free. In the US, it's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's 001-530-876-3222. But for the international call, it's not toll-free, but go on, it's only a quick call, and it's only, 8 p.m. in the evening.
Yeah.
So you're not doing anything better. Forget the soap operas. Give us a call.
Well, hi. My name's Mick Avery. As well as Spirit's Work on the wonderful and ever-present bbsradio.com every Monday at 7 and Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, we have another radio show, which is called Spirit Teaching. And you can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. PST. If you'd like to know more about us, our books, CDs, Book and Akashic Reading, please go visit our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com and live at www.spiritsworkradio.com. Each week, live on the show, I channel an enlightened spirit guide called Gregory Hay, who is the main spokesperson for a group of highly evolved spirits called the White Cloud Group. Gregory himself had an earth life in the early 1700s in England, but now he has come back to share the vast insights and wisdom he has gained access to with those of us still on the earth. And I have to do that right now so we can get on with the show. So without further ado, I'm going to hand you back to Sylvie, and she's going to explain a little more about Gregory and the whole process of the show. Thank you very much. Goodbye for now.
Gregory is a spokesperson for the White Cloud Group, who consists of scientific minds of all descriptions, along with ordinary people. They're an educational team and have come to give us access to information that we need to know in order that we may move towards a more harmonious and peaceful way of life, hopefully to understand the nature of our existence and save our world from the negative spiral we seem to be caught in. When Mick is in trance, his spirit and his consciousness are transported and held by the scientific members of the White Cloud Group so that we can enjoy the complete personality of Spirit Gregory. This means there's no room for errors because interpretation doesn't happen. So as Mick said, you can find out more about us from our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com. And once again, if you have a question for Gregory regarding our show topic, the number to call is, in the US, 877-876-5227, in Canada, 888-815-9756, and international callers, it's not toll-free, but it's 001-530-876-3222. And I'd just like to say that on Monday, actually, we're going to be talking about the plight of Bigfoot, so if we've got any Sasquatch fans out there, tune in on Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific. But anyway, today we're going to be talking about animals' sensitivity and their sensitivity to planetary awareness, and we're going to find out what the spirit world have to tell us about this. So I welcome Gregory now.
Hello, my dear friend, with love and light, as always. Blessed be your pathway.
Thank you. you. Thank you. Well, I'm really looking forward to today's show because we want to investigate the more spiritual aspects, possibly, of why situations occur with animals and their connection to, well, to all that is, really, each other and the planet. So where would you like to start with that? What have you got to tell us?
Well, really, my dear friend, it is to say that, to begin with, when human beings look at animals, they tend to think in terms of the negative rather to do with what they have to do in order to survive. This then appears to depict that animals are a lesser life form. Quite simply, humanity seems to have befriended itself in that thinking of that only higher consciousness can possibly exist within humankind alone. This actually is quite wrong, and quite a wrongful accusation to place at those animals who actually have acquired a great deal of consciousness. This is in no small measure just elephants and perhaps swans or perhaps some kinds of felines or dog or wolf or whatever it is. This is actually also that even beetles themselves have conscious emotional ties between themselves and their mate. They do not just create situations of breeding with their mate through pure instinct. I'm not saying that they mate for conditions other than instinct, but what I am saying is they are consciously aware of one another, are able to actually communicate both using different methods of perhaps situations to do with sound or usually to do with vibration and that kind of situation. And also, of course, that they're able to communicate due to pheromonic chemical activity, which they release one to another. And also, to a point, they are aurically aware of one another, sense one another's vibration. Vibration is very important to understanding all animal life, because all animals in their natural world, and also those in captivity, have an understanding of the conscious setting of all life upon the planet. Why then do you think that humanity, for some reason, struggles with such a situation? Is actually because of the intensive negativity with which they are bathed at this time. And that's actually most of the reason why it's so difficult for human beings to try to assimilate, to try to actually make contact with, have this form of communication, telepathic, or communication of the vibration intensity of the Earth itself.
So are you saying that we were better at it before we became so populated and so many of us and so industrialized and materialized? And
oh, yes, absolutely so, my dear friend. If you take a look at any indigenous people who continue to live upon the Earth in the ancient ways, perhaps, yes, maybe they do live in mud huts. Maybe it is that they don't actually have specific dwellings as such, but tend to roam from one place to another place, or maybe even dwell in caves, or some such thing as that. How they actually identify, however, with their life is not that they are preempted in their understanding, in their intention, by those things material, which means that your needs have been stretched beyond just going out and clubbing to death one animal or whatever to bring back for food, that actually it is far removed from that. And instead of human beings using their extreme consciousness evolution, because it is extremely evolved, the consciousness evolution of human beings, instead of using it for the adepts of which it is really formed for, materialism.
Mm. Well, I know we don't want to go too much into this because it's about the animals, but
yes,
is why we tell people to that if they meditate, they can tune into this ancient history, their etheric history, as it were, of their spirit that's always been.
Yes, of course. And of course, as it is of fact that your spirit is never actually in the physical world, but actually remains in the spirit world, it means that by bringing about the connectivity between your physical state and your spirit, you actually will have the best of both worlds. It will be possible for you to use and utilize these kinds of ancient methods of communication, which allows you to actually have a much better contact with your supreme sensitivity, that which God has given you, rather than actually tending more to look to animal life and wonder where it was that you had gone wrong. Well, in actual fact, animals too actually have quite a difficulty sometimes in communicating with the way in which they should have, perhaps because of radio waves and that kind of interference through modern technology, which has actually put a great strain upon the ability for animals themselves to actually intercommunicate not just with each other, but with the planet.
So they can't communicate with each other as good as it was, as they could before we got so overpopulated with everything that entails.
Yes, absolutely,
right.
So.
Okay, so they're finding new ways of communication.
Yes.
With each other as well.
Yes, of course, they're moving forward as well as their evolution grows. Now, whereas you see human beings within each generation or each group within a specific family, you will see it moving forward, not just in the stereotype of perhaps the evolution of the mind or the consciousness. Even that is not necessarily a given. It could well be that the consciousness of a human being is retrospective. It may well be that in some generations it moves backward, or in some families it moves backward, quite simply because of their settings, because of the environment, which has an impact upon you as an individual. Now, if you look at animals themselves, am I saying then that their consciousness is constantly moving forward? Well, actually, I'm saying that there are very subtle differences between one and another group. As a group, they will, shall we take then a pack of wolves? As a group, they will gradually learn and evolve. And within that group, it will become more and more successful within their own environment. As the group grows and learns, information is passed one to another. In the same light, you may look at a troop of elephants, and you would see that their communication process is one which is very intensive. It's not just to do with their communication with one another, but that in actual fact, they show one another how to communicate the patterns of the earth and what these different communications mean when they each feel them. Now, I'm not just talking about the actual vibration patterns which come through their feet, which actually give them warnings of such things like tsunamis or such things as earthquakes and that kind of situation, which they feel deep within the bowels of the earth, way beyond the interpretation of human validity. It's actually also something which they sense through their noses as well, through their trunks, as they have very fine ancillary hairs which actually pick up the vibrations moving across the earth, across the surface of the earth, you see? This is also something which they actually pick up through their inner ear as well as coming through their consciousness. And so it's something which has evolved over thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, in fact. Even the woolly mammoth had adepts at this as well, although one may say that they actually fell foul of it because they did not determine that the Ice Age would create such havoc.
I was going to say, what could they have done about it? You know.
Well, yes, nothing apart from trying to travel south, but they didn't. That's the point. They actually lost their bearings en masse, really.
Oh, okay. Actually, they're talking about the fact that they can maybe bring a woolly mammoth to life.
Yes, I understand, through
possible?
Their DNA and genetics.
Hmm.
Well, yes, it is actually very difficult to enable DNA and genetics within an animal which has actually become so fossilized, really. They would actually have to be able to find soft tissue which actually holds enough DNA within it to be able to illuminate that possibility, and would then, of course, mate it with a modern-day African elephant in order to do that.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's not possible.
Mm. All right, well, that's very interesting.
But probably the whole reason behind that would be to supply a new form of meat or something like that, I expect. I don't have very much faith in the articulates of the reasons as to why people have a vested interest in this situation or that situation, quite simply because the monopoly of material wealth tends to come uppermost, unless, of course, you're people like those of Monkey World or something like that, who have a complete and vested interest in the true well-being of primates. That is something of ulterior motive, of humanity at its best.
Mm. Have we got any animal experts with us in the spirit world tonight, today?
Well...
on the show, with you?
Yes, I understand that Sir Peter Scott, of course, is here, as well as Jacques Cousteau. I know that they are mainly to do with birds and amphibians and also of the oceanic world. But there are also others as well who are present.
Hmm. Okay.
Mr. Desmond Morris, among others.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And if you'd like to join us with a question relating to our subject about animal sensitivity and their planetary awareness, which we'll go into as well very shortly, the number is toll-free in the US. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's not toll-free, but it's 001-530-876-3222. So, could you tell us a little bit about animals that actually, why certain animals harmonize with each other beyond the Earth plane that possibly wouldn't do here? Maybe prey, predatory animals and their prey.
Yes.
You know, that obviously don't mix here, that maybe do there, and why, or which ones don't.
Yes, quite so. Very well then, let's take the lion and the gazelle.
Okay, okay.
As a classic example, or maybe perhaps the lion and the wildebeest. Yes, that would perhaps be more appropriate.
Okay.
Wildebeest, on the surface of it, on the face of it, tend to be regarded as the most dimmest of all animals, quite simply because they appear not to be able to move to a different location. They would always repeat their patterns of life, exactly the same as when they are wondering whether to cross a particular river which is full of crocodiles at a certain time of year. Why don't they just make a trip early, and then they would not run the risk that they would normally. So one may look at this in different ways, as opposed to wondering, well, why don't they use their collective consciousness, perhaps, to come to or arrive at a different decision, which is actually obvious because not one of them is in particular control. They just move as an en masse situation, and they only regard 1 in 12 of their nearest neighbor. So they only have communication with the 12th, up to the 12th wildebeest, which is closest to them.
And that can be any wildebeest. I mean, that's
yes.
not like
yes.
a specific type, family member or whatever. It's just whoever is in the 12th nearest and inwards
yes.
to them at any one time.
Yes, that is quite true, which which is actually why it is that they do not actually tend to do very well. If they are singled out, they then lose the whole dynamic of the situation. Not forgetting also that it is usually those wildebeest who are either sick, young, or otherwise infirmed, which would actually bring about a decimation perhaps to the whole herd if they continued. Yes, I know that there are very great difficulties here with the situation. We won't go into that at the moment in time. What we need to concentrate upon is, well, what about the animosity then between the lion itself, the lioness usually, of course it is, and the wildebeest? Well, actually, the field of animosity would well be that actually there can't be that much animosity between them on a physical level, quite simply because wildebeest will actually happily coexist with lion. Otherwise, whenever lion was seen, wildebeest would run away. But they don't. It's a bit like seeing pictures of the fox playing in the field, in the same field with sheep.
I know, but you were just saying that about them being stupid, so to say. I mean...
Well, yes, exactly.
Can they go somewhere else? Do they know that they can go somewhere else?
Well, this is the point, isn't it, to do with the communication of consciousness. Does a being actually know that it has a possibility other than the thought it already has? I only want to eat this piece of grass, and doesn't actually link with any other conscious thought about their own precept of life. That is where human beings tend to draw the line as to whether they can conceive that other animals actually have a rationale of intelligence vis-a-vis, whereas human beings obviously rationalize. And so that is why it is quite incumbent, of course, upon human beings to try to run tests upon animals, to try to dictate as to what kind of rationality and what kind of conscious thought it may be. Can they equate with number, or can they equate with the structures of communication which actually form sense? And that too, you see, this is actually really a part of the whole question, because you are looking at trying to understand the evaluation of the consciousness, the emotional consciousness, which is behind the animal. What does it think when it is being brought down by a lion? Purely, it thinks, I want to live, and tries to struggle against that which is inflicted upon it.
Mm-hmm.
Until, at such time, as it passes, or it gives up, and is sequestered to the spirit world. So what then of this situation, as you rightly point out? It is not a condition of animosity. There is not a labored animosity between one animal and another. The lion, objectively, would love to be able to, perhaps, if it had a conscious will and setting, to enable it to adopt some kind of weapon which would then bring down the wildebeest, so therefore not having to make all of that inroad into trying to trap the thing in the first place.
So what happens when they get to the spirit world? Do they ever see a lion?
Oh yes.
They do?
Yes, absolutely. And what happens is that different animal groups very often have situations to do with recompense and reconciliation, exactly the same as human beings do, and that they actually have to make recompense within their different species. This is partly due to the work of all of those billions and trillions of beings in the spirit world, pure beings in the spirit world, who have not had a physical life, who actually mend the relationships between animals and animal types, different species groups, once they have had a physical life. Don't forget, friend, that every single animal, when it is in contest with one another, it is struggling for survival to secure its DNA so that it alone is able to continue its DNA and genetic cycle. That is the whole precept of the conscious living condition that animals in the wild tend to percolate. Now, what you are looking at in the spirit world is that these situations come into the melting pot of the whole etheric world. And those conscious animals, I know that they have had their life has come to cessation by the grossest of means.
Mm-hmm.
They've been eaten alive, or
mm-hmm.
that they were killed by a ring of the neck, or the whatever. Mm-hmm. However that was brought about. Usually it's a broken neck or something like that. Now, the situation then for human beings is they tend to attract all of the energy and connotation upon how tragic and pathetic and ill of God to allow such a condition of emotional empathy with that act. But the beings are not conscious beings to have a decision one way or another during their lifetime cycle. That isn't a part of their pathway at that time. It's not to say that wildebeests do not have other etheric thoughts during their physical life. And they do, and they have consciousness, contact with the earth. They actually feel sunlight, as well as having the actual physical expression of it, of warmth upon their skin. They know when the seasons change, and they have empathy with it, with their chemical reaction, and also their spirit has empathy with it. They see beauty in the starlit night.
Okay, but so we'll go back to the spirit world we'll stick to the wildebeest passing.
Yes, let's.
Okay, because you've said before that the animals have different, separate soul groups.
Yes.
So so they get introduced to their predator.
Yes.
In the spirit world by people who are there to do this job.
By beings who are there to do that job. It is
beings.
Not a situation, I know.
No,
I
that's great, yeah.
It,
you see, I presumed it was human beings,
of course,
didn't I?
Of course, one would.
But even though, yes, even though you just said that they hadn't had a physical life yet, I still said
yes.
Human beings,
of
didn't
course.
I, people.
Yes,
okay, so what would these energies be then?
Pure spirit, perhaps, who are aligned to wildebeest, are going to be the wildebeest of the future. What then? Does that mean that all of those spirits who are the wildebeest of the future are eventually going to end up as a meal for a lion?
Well, it wouldn't exactly make them want to come to have a journey here, would it? After they've seen all of that?
But the point, well, one would question it. I understand that. Absolutely so. But the point is that it's a form of consciousness setting which that spirit, that being, wishes to enhance with their life. And that is their choice to do so.
Well, yes, and actually, we because we've done the same anyway and met all these thousands and millions of other people that have had a physical life and we've still come
well,
and
yes,
had
exactly,
a go.
Exactly so, yes.
Mm,
yes.
So.
Wouldn't you have thought that that even those beings who had moved and travelled with all of those poor wretches who took part in the First World War, you would think that most spirit would say, no, I'm not going to have anything to do with that life.
Mm, absolutely, yes.
But, however, the consciousness setting changes. The situation of physical evolution moves forward and progress is made. Within the consciousness setting of one animal, who can say from the advantage, one might say, of you being a human being, that you look upon the wildebeest and say, oh, well, that is a being of limited imagination or limited conscious view. Yes, it is, as that physical being. But that's not to say that the spirit of that being is of that limited conscious view.
Okay. So, lions and wildebeest actually become friends in the spirit world.
Yes.
Eventually,
yes.
And they,
absolutely
they do. Okay, what animals, for instance, don't actually gel well at all in the spirit world?
Well, I understand worms don't really gel. situations tend to be that worms and beings of that kind of conscious living, well, because of the fact that they don't have consciousness connection, that means that they don't do things out of need or desire. They are purely, figuratively, I suppose you could say, reacting in instinct. So the situation is driven in exactly the same way as many other simpler life forms tend to take, that they are each subject to, yes, I know they're a part of the earth and a part of that dynamism of etheric energy, but they are also, sadly, not yet evolved in their consciousness setting in order to be able to actually evaluate what they are. They don't know they're a worm, you see?
Mm-hmm.
However, the situation between them in the spirit world is that it's a singular energy, not a plural energy. So it tends to be that all worms move within the same energy light and do not appear to move forward with that energy and to evolve as a different being or to evolve with a consciousness etheric.
Is there any other creature that's like that, similar to that?
Yes, well, as I say, there are many forms of amoeba-like creatures. Creatures which are have simpler forms that actually do not have any other form of connectivity with the spirit light.
What about other creatures that have more of a consciousness than that? Is there any that don't get on with other creatures?
Yes, well, as I say, there are many, many creatures who are generally adversarial in physical life, and they have a great deal to make up within their spirit and etheric journey once they have come back to our side of life after having a physical existence. As I say, usually they have become someone else's meal in the process of their journey.
So what sort of creatures would this be?
Well, everything that you can practically think of. All mammals, for example, all beings which are also quite a few beetles as well, quite a few of the insect world also have a consciousness setting. Ants, for example, have a very great duty of care, a consciousness setting. It's not something which is purely instinctive. Decisions are made, different decisions are made, and they're made en masse by the collective as a fully conscious understanding, you see?
So are there any animals that don't get on with other animals just because they don't get on with them, because they're just not that sociable, not because they've got eaten by somebody else in when they had a life, but just because they're not that sociable?
Yes, well, absolutely so. I can understand that hyenas and lions, or hyenas and cheetahs, for example, don't actually get on, even though they don't eat one another. But they don't actually get on at all. Usually, this is thought of, actually, when we look at it in the physical world, that it's actually because they generally tend to predatorize one another's food.
Yes.
And that can be a situation particularly difficult for cheetahs, as they tend to operate as a single being, or they actually have quite a hard time of it, I understand, and are on the endangered species list because of that. But the situation, however, between them in the spirit world is actually full of animosity still, and that's quite strange, really. But it's actually because of the fact that cheetahs themselves they're a very beautiful animal, but they are also a very beautiful spirit, and hyenas tend not to be. They have a very selfish attitude, both in the spirit world as well as their physical attributes displayed in the physical world journey.
That's
which
interesting.
Is actually quite strange. There are very few spirits who actually illuminate that. And actually, with that particular being, hyenas and that kind of being, jackals as well, to a point, they actually have a very meager sort of existence in the physical side of life, and when the spirit returns, they actually have to have a great deal of healing brought about to them in order to change their consciousness setting, if you like, from being the animal. They have to recover from it, you see? And it actually takes them quite a long time to do that. Now, it's not to say that in the purified world of the spirit world that they are not able to actually attain that. I understand that they do readily attain it. It just takes a while to do.
Is there any particular bonding going on in the spirit world between animals that have had a physical life that we would find interesting?
Yes, I suppose so. You could actually see that there are some forms of animal life, particularly when there are different animals which are brought together that would not normally know one another.
Hmm.
For example, like parrots and cats.
Really?
Yes. Parrots and cats actually get on very well. And surprisingly enough, that even this is true, too, to a certain extent, in the physical world. If you actually allowed them to make peace with one another, they would. If they did not actually start from the point of adversarial contact to begin with, that's usually the situation which actually destroys the possible temperament within them. But actually, if you are looking at the situation spirit to spirit, they are fairly similar. Both are very intelligent, both are very single-minded, and actually tend to act alone in that respect.
Parrots are a very interesting creature that we've not really talked about. I think I can't remember us ever talking about parrots, and yet we talk about other other animals with specific gifts, qualities, and intelligence. I mean, what's with this being able to teach them all of these things, these amazing things?
Well, yes, of course.
I mean, it's not, you know, and they've only got a beak, for heaven's sake.
Well, yes, of course, but they do have the possibility of using their vocal prowess. That's the point, really.
Yes.
And they have a very acute learning potential. They can learn far more in the success of the 75 phrases that have so far been validated by science. They can actually do at least twice as much as that.
Oh, so what does this mean then, that there's other animals, not necessarily birds, but other animals, that if they had the same vocal connection that parrots have got, that they could speak these words as well?
Well, yes, it's a possibility. Don't forget, of course, that's all a situation of anatomy. However, if you came to understand a parrot and actually were, or another animal that had those faculties and properties, and allowed them and got into their physical gift, if you like, of how they could actually communicate with the greatest dexterity, you would actually find that they could write.
Hmm. Because when you look at a parrot,
given the right tool, you see.
Well, this is it, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, we could, if we can try and get other animals to talk till the cows come home, excuse the pun, but you know, if they haven't got the vocal cords and the connection like a parrot, then it'll never do that, but we would never know.
Yes, that is quite true. And it's exactly the same as the reason as to why the experimentation of monkeys at this time to do with number is actually focused purely because of their photographic memory. This is not something which goes amiss, but is actually a part of their trait which has moved them through and beyond their disassociation with human beings, but actually has gone way beyond that. Also, of course, we have to accept this was a certain given trait as well to other forms of life, of human behavior, which had actually gone on, perhaps, shall we say, to do with the Philippines or Indonesia, where human beings only ever attained a given height of some 4 feet. and never reached anything beyond that. If you are looking at the original habitats of places like that many thousands of years ago, you would actually see that these pygmy-like beings were actually full of, yes, they may have had a small or a different actual physical brain, but they actually had a very deep consciousness setting were able to rationalize and had emotional detail as well as having their spirit perfectly registering their own soul groups and their own destiny within that aspect.
So, I'm going to ask you some more about other animals that get along with each other that would surprise us. But until then, if you'd like to join us with a question relating to our topic tonight, today, it's a toll-free number in the US, 877-876-5227. In the USA, in Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's not toll-free, and the number is 001-530-876-3222. So, yes, can you think of any more? It's fascinating.
Yes, well, of course, you have certain forms of amphibians who actually talk and communicate using sign language.
Uh-huh.
And they use their fingers. They wave, yes, but it's not just a wave. It's actually that they use different digits of their fingers in order to communicate language. They do this quite simply because it's pointless croaking to one another because physically they cannot hear one another due to the environmental noise of the background and the environment in which they live, in the rainforest where they actually habitat. So instead of that, they have over millions of years evolved this situation of communication with sign language, and it's perfectly natural for them to do so. Sadly, I understand the last remainings of those have actually been taken into captivity in an attempt, a vain attempt, I understand, to try to save that species from complete extinction.
Why do you say sadly? Because I know you've said before about gorillas, about possibly that being the only method that's left in order to be able to save the gorillas is to actually capture them and breed them in captivity.
Yes, I totally agree with that. The problem is that there were insufficient understanding of these beings in physical life by humanity, not forgetting, of course, that humanity is actually responsible for their demise in the first place, so actually should have a duty of care to protect all species who face extinction. And if it is that it's a situation which is to determine their environment as being a part of the extinctive process, then it should be humanity's duty of care to actually entrap the remaining species. There have to be over 250 of any one species left in order to continue to profit that species genetically, because the species needs genetics variants to actually enable the tipping point to be suppressed within that given species. Otherwise, you would find that there is insufficient variation of genetics to enable that species to survive. Now, I am well aware that when you look at species, a single species, you think automatically that they're all the same because, oh yes, that's the given situation, all of their organs are going to be in exactly the same place, and every single one of them looks exactly like another one, another form of that same species. But actually, they each recognize each other. If you have a whole tribe, shall we say, of wildebeest, numbering some 10 or 15,000 or even more, they each recognize one another. They don't have names for one another, but they do recognize that they have different energies, and that is something which their spirit does relate to. So it is something which you are looking at and observing on a consciousness setting. Similarly, vis-a-vis, I say, my dear friend, when you are looking and understanding about the contact and consciousness setting of a horse and of a group of horses, they all recognize one another. They have extreme consciousness settings which are extremely in touch and quantifiable with their spirit and with their soul intention. A horse's understanding is not purely there because of humanity, but that actually has evolved and driven itself. You have exactly the same connectivity with a herd of zebra as you do with a herd of horses. Between one another, and actually if you put zebra with horses, you will find that they communicate very well together as well, as placing in the same group a copy, or any other being, tapir even to a certain extent, in the same group, because they actually come from the same distinct lineage, the same genetics, but also they come from the same overall balance of soul groups that are within that genetic herd. I'm not saying that all the genetics of horse are just from one soul group. No, they're not. They're from many thousands of different soul groups. They're actually extremely individual. It's why they have all of these different temperaments. They're not just displays of genetics or the similarities of instinct, but they're actually individual beings and their individual spirit having a physical existence.
So in the spirit world, going back to the unusual bonding partnerships, are there? Can you tell us some more that get along with each other that we wouldn't think that would be the case?
Yes, of course, cats, mice, and dogs, and actually different forms of being as well. Even I understand that it has been seen that cats and praying mantis.
Really?
Yes.
So it's even animals that didn't know each other when they were having a journey here, a
yes.
physical life. They
well, just... yes, or actually ones that do know one another, that they meet by accident.
Yes, on the decking or whatever.
Yes, yes, rabbits and dogs or something like that.
Hmm.
You see, dogs don't just automatically chase a rabbit unless they have actually been pre-cultured or programmed to do so.
So do these creatures do these creatures in the spirit world actually seek each other out and decide that they want to be with that animal?
Because yes, it can happen that way.
So without an intermediate,
yes,
sort of somebody involved in that, bringing them together?
It is possible, but usually such a situation is brought to the attention of those energies of that particular soul group, shall we say, and the situation is that, of course, the spirit of that animal still has perfectly true to the state of the ethereal world a free will existence. And that means if that is the energy which that spirit wishes to identify, there are very interesting relationships that blossom within the spirit world purely because of the dynamic of their energy and how they wish to show that in all things, the energy of the creation of all life is one.
Are there creatures, animals that before they have a physical life, okay, that got on with each other that then didn't get on?
In the
physical world, and then when they got back, they got on again. Is that possible?
Spiders and flies, for example, is a classic.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, absolutely so. In fact, actually, there is a bridge between spiders and flies of one different life form to another, because, of course, spiders are animals.
You see, when I think of flies, I think of, you know, the worm, really.
Yes, no, I understand that, but actually flies have quite they do have a consciousness setting. I wouldn't say that their spirit is particularly, it's actually singular. So it doesn't have a consciousness input into the fly's life, as it were.
No, but a spider does?
A spider does, yes. Absolutely so. Spiders make decisions all the time. They have a consciousness ability. They have a spiritual connection with their physical life and with the situation of that life. They make decisions and change their minds.
Mm.
they alternate their consciousness living journey, and they actually make decisions for the benefit and sometimes at the behest of others. And they will also, of course, meet together and make tribal dance and make tribal situations happen between them. And that can be different spiders of different species, of different infrastructure, will actually come together and unite within a common purpose sometimes, if that is the situation that needs to be brought about, if they feel that that's an environmental control that they can meet with, that's their advantage. So similarly, my dear friend, you may actually find that during, shall we say, an earthquake or something like that, that different forms of spider will all congregate and actually climb one tree, because they have all decided it's the safest place to be.
Wow.
Due to their collective consciousness.
Whereas otherwise they wouldn't be in each other's company, close proximity.
Yes, well, they probably eat one another, you see.
Very interesting. Okay, well, that's been absolutely fascinating, Gregory. Thank you very much.
Thank you so. With love and light, God bless upon your pathway. Safe journey.
And we hope you've enjoyed the show. I'd just like to mention our website again, which is www.spirit-teaching.com, where you can find out more information about us and our books. You can also purchase them from bookstores and Amazon. And if you take a browse through our website, you can maybe look at our Akashic Readings page, and maybe if you fancy it, book yourself an Akashic reading, telephone reading. And we'll be here with you again on Monday, where we'll be talking about the plight of the Bigfoot. So if you're any Sasquatch fans out there, listen in. It's going to be absolutely fascinating. And until then, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.